having me back at the Perimeter Institute. It's always a pleasure to come here. Can people hear me? Am I being amplified? Should I speak up?
Maybe actually you are being amplified, cuz.
I feel amplified. That's why I'm keeping my voice down. It's making me very self-conscious. The other question is that legible? Yeah, there may be a dip as the talk goes on, so if there's anything you can't read, I won't be at all insulted if you ask me to repeat it. Okay, so section zero is kind of motivation or history. And this is going to be an extremely compressed history of a slice of geometric representation theory. So let's start with Q, a quiver, which is really for us just a finite directed graph. Finite in the sense that it has finitely many vertices and arrows. Out of this, one can form gamma, which is just the underlying graph. Underlying graph. And out of this, we can form the algebra. It should be G gamma, but GQ. So it only depends on gamma. This is some Lie algebra given by generators and relations, where the generators are given by, indexed by the vertices of my graph, and the relations are indexed by, determined by the number of arrows or edges between any two vertices. So if this graph is of ADE type, then this algebra is too. So it's some semi-simple Lie algebra. These semi-simple Lie algebras have well-known generators and relations presentations. The point is, this recipe that takes me from a graph to such an algebra doesn't require that I feed into it an ADE type quiver. So if gamma is any other type, some other type, then I still get this Lie algebra given by generators and relations, but now it's a Katz-Moody Lie algebra, or if Q has loops in it, it will be a Borchardt's algebra. How low down can I go? Probably quite low. And out of this, we consider the geometric representation theory. So I guess from the 80s onwards, I'm only going to name two people, Nakajima, Gronovsky. But really, by all rights, I should fill up three of these blackboards with people's names. Realize that there is an action of this Lie algebra. I'm going to revert to, GQ, not G gamma. An action of this Lie algebra on the cohomology of what are known as Nakajima quiver varieties. I'm not going to go any further down. What's the point of this talk, or the sort of starting point of this talk? Well, the geometric representation theory here, it sort of takes on a life of its own. So not just this algebra, plus actions of various quantum cousins, quantum groups, associated to GQ. And the sort of philosophy of this talk is that beyond a certain point in the development of this theory, the geometric representation theory itself becomes more interesting than this generators and relations type Lie algebra. So, So here's a sort of modern viewpoint. It's this, that GQ is really, should be thought of as really a sub Lie algebra of the endomorphism algebra of the cohomology of all of these Nakajima quiver varieties. It's really something that should be thought of geometrically. And in this direction, the natural sub Lie algebra. So here, natural for me means the one that the geometric representation theory itself tells us to study is bigger. And I'm going to call it GQ tilde. And I'm going to try and get towards saying two things about GQ tilde. So this should be cohomologically graded. Such that if I take this bigger algebra and take its zeroth cohomology, I get the old Kac-Moody-Lie algebra. So I haven't just taken a wild leap off into the dark and defined some completely new algebra and told everyone that it replaces this algebra. It's some enrichment of it. And also, this algebra, GQ tilde, is purely geometrically defined. I'm not really an algebraist, so I don't sort of get excited about generators and relations type presentations of algebras. Really, the interesting algebras are the ones that the geometry dictates for us, the geometry tells us to look at, as opposed to things where it's just easy to write down an explicit presentation. And I should say, it's more or less impossible to write down an explicit presentation of this, except in some examples. OK, so that's my sort of lead in. Any questions so far? This is all sort of prehistory. So what follows is a section of prep just to nail down some notations and remind you of some notions. So as in section zero, Q is a quiver, meaning that I have some pair of finite sets, Q1, the arrows, Q0, the vertices, and a pair of maps between them, S and T, for source and target, taking an arrow to its source and target. And out of this, I formed two symmetric quivers. And just as a sort of postscript to this, it will turn out there are essentially three different ways to do this. They all turn out to be the same. One is the approach of Maulik and Okunkov via a sort of geometric R matrix construction, which very much satisfies this condition, and also, because it's equivalent to the others, satisfies this condition. And then there are two others in terms of cohomological Hall algebras. There's one that has a kind of 2D flavor, and there's one that has a kind of 3D flavor. I'm going to try and give them both in parallel, and maybe say something about the relation to the Maulik-Okunkov approach at the very end. So the 2D version will be controlled by the doubled quivers. So this is 2D. The vertices of this quiver are the vertices of my original quiver, and the arrows are the arrows of my original quiver. I take two copies, and for one, I reverse the orientation. And the standard notation is the original arrows are denoted by letters A, B, C, and so on. And their doubles, i.e. the second copy with the orientation reversed and the same letter with a star. And then there's the 3D version, which is controlled by a tripled quiver, which is a slightly unfortunate name. This has, again, the same vertices as my original quiver. And it has the same arrows as the doubled quiver union, a bunch of loops, one for each vertex. Okay, so let gamma be a bunch of natural numbers, one for each of the vertices of any one of these three quivers. Then I define the affine space A, Q, gamma. This is the product over the arrows of my quiver of homomorphisms from C, gamma source A to C, gamma target of A. So this is a space, affine space of gamma dimensional Q representations, or CQ modules. Okay, so I'll just say in words what a Q representation is. It's an assignment of a vector space to every vertex and a linear map to every arrow. And in particular, any such object carries the discrete data of what is the dimension vector. And I should also introduce this guy. So this is what's known as the free path algebra. Free path algebra. And it has as basis paths in Q of length greater than or equal to zero, where the paths of length zero pick a vertex to start at and then just don't go anywhere. These are called the lazy paths. And the multiplication is concatenation of paths, if it's possible, or zero otherwise. This affine space is acted on by G gamma, which is the product over the vertices of GL C gamma I. There's a notion of an isomorphism of quiver representations, which is an isomorphism of all of the vector spaces above all of my vertices, which commutes with the action of the arrows, which is the same thing as an isomorphism of CQ modules. And a moment's thought reveals that two points in here representing two different gamma dimensional CQ modules are isomorphic if and only if they're in the same orbit of this group action. If I take the stack theoretic quotient of this affine space by this group, this is the stack of gamma dimensional Q representations or CQ modules. And there is a map from this stack to its coarse moduli space, which is given by spec of the G gamma invariant functions on here, A Q gamma G gamma invariant. On the face of it, this is just something that is geometrically defined. I've taken some space with some action, and I've taken the categorical quotient. But it also has a modular interpretation. So the points in here correspond to semi-simple gamma dimensional Q reps. And this map that takes me from here, the stack of gamma dimensional Q reps down to here, the coarse moduli space, what it does at the level of points is it takes my module, takes its Jordan Holder filtration, takes the simple subquotients that appear in that filtration, and then takes their direct sum. So it's semi-standard to refer to this map as JH for Jordan Holder. Okay. Where can I take one more board without veering too far off? Okay, so if I consider, instead of this affine space, the affine space corresponding to the doubled quiver, this is isomorphic to the total cotangent space of AQ gamma. Why is that? Well, here I have a homomorphism from here to here for every arrow. And in the doubled version, I have a homomorphism going back the other way. And I can compose those and take the trace to get a linear functional. So there's this natural isomorphism. And this is symplectic with moment map mu gamma going to GL gamma, which is the Lie algebra G gamma, but more explicitly is the product over the vertices of endomorphisms C gamma I. And this moment map, it's sort of well known, it takes a representation rho to the sum over the arrows, rho A, not left enough space. The sum over the arrows, commutator of rho evaluated at A, rho evaluated at the double of A. And I can consider inside here the pre-image of zero under this moment map. And this also has a modular interpretation. This is the subspace of representations or gamma dimensional representations over the pre-projective algebra for Q, where this algebra is the free path algebra for CQ bar modulo a relation that looks suspiciously like this. So the sum over A and Q1 commutator A star. So given this is the two-sided ideal generated by this element. Given the striking similarity between this term and this term, that what's on this board is at some level of tautology. And if I then take U inverse of zero, stack theoretic quotient G gamma, this is the stack of gamma dimensional representations for the pre-projective algebra. Now, if instead I take the similar space but for Q tilde, this is, I mean, what is a Q tilde representation? It's a Q bar representation with some extra data. What is the extra data? It's the data of an endomorphism for each of my vector spaces. So putting those words back into maths, we get that, that a point in here is given by a point in here. T star A Q gamma, and a point in here. So this is telling me what to assign to all the new loops. And now there's a general construction that sort of soups up symplectic geometry to 3D symplectic geometry. The name is meant to be stupid. It goes as follows. I take my symplectic space, I take the target of the moment map, and I pair them together to get a function. So the function here takes rho eta to the trace of mu evaluated at rho times eta. Let me magnify this. Trace mu evaluated at rho times eta. So in true generality, what I'm doing is I'm taking my point in the symplectic space along with something in the Lie algebra target of the moment map, and I'm applying the killing form to moment map applied to my thing and my given point in the Lie algebra. Okay, so I have some function on this space, which is again going to be g gamma, which is g gamma invariant by cyclic invariance of the trace. And inside here, the next step in the recipe is I consider the critical locus of this function. At some point in this talk, I'm going to revert to calling this function trace w. I can consider critical locus of trace w. And just as up here, the sort of degenerate subspace had a modular interpretation, this, again, has a modular interpretation. Maybe this is very slightly more surprising. This is the subspace of representations of the Jacobi algebra, Q tilde, so modules for this algebra, where the definition of this is I take the free path algebra for the tripled quiver, and I quotient out by all of the non-commutative derivatives for all of the arrows in the tripled quiver. The non-commutative derivative being I take each instance of B that I find in each word in W, I cyclically permute it to the front, and then I delete it. In this case, it's not too hard to work out what W is meant to be. W is equal to the sum over the arrows of the original quiver, A commutator A star, times the sum over the vertices of the original quiver, omega I. You can kind of read that out off from here, or if you can't read that here. So let me do an example. So there will be a running example in this talk, and indeed in the entire subject, which is I let Q be the one-loop quiver, also known as the Jordan quiver. Then if I call this loop A, then my free path algebra is the polynomial algebra in one variable A, i.e. how many times do I go around the loop? That gives me my power of A. Q bar is equal to this guy. Now C Q bar is the free algebra in two generators, and pi q. So I meant to quotient out by the relation given by the commutators of all of the a's and the a stars. Well, there's only one a star here, so I quotient out by the commutator of these two guys, and I get the free polynomial algebra in two generators. And if I look now at q tilde, this is the three-loop quiver. A star omega, the free path algebra is now the free algebra three generators, and what's this Jacobi algebra? Jacobi algebra Q W. So now W is just commutator A star omega. This is this guy. Modulo the derivatives of this W for B equal to A star or omega. Okay, so if I try and work out what is the non-commutative derivative of W, say, with respect to A. So there are two words here. There's A star omega, and there's A star A omega. I cyclically permute A to the front of each of those words and delete. So for the first word, I get A star omega. For the second one, I get omega A star, but minus. So minus omega A star. So this relation is telling me that A star and omega commute. But there's a kind of cyclic symmetry here, i.e. if I take any one of the three letters and take the non-commutative derivative with respect to it, it tells me that the other two letters commute. So this Jacobi algebra is the polynomial algebra in three generators. So I should say, as a sort of as a remark that I often forget, I picked this example because it's quick to get up on the board, but it's actually highly atypical. And in particular, this Jacobi algebra and also the preprojective algebra are almost never commutative. Usually not commutative. Okay. And I mentioned earlier that you can kind of see a representation of the doubled quiver inside a representation of the tripled quiver, i.e. you can forget the action of the loops and you get a representation of the tripled quiver. Something similar happens when you put in all these relations. You see here, you can this algebra is a subalgebra of this algebra. I can forget the action of the extra loops, and I get a representation of the corresponding preprojective algebra. And that phenomenon is not special to this quiver. We have the following proposition. That the Jacobi algebra for the tripled quiver with its potential is always isomorphic to the preprojective algebra adjoined one central element, i.e. polynomials in one variable with coefficients in the preprojective algebra, where under this isomorphism, this guy goes to the sum of the omega i's. The second last bit of prep is the following remark. That there's a there's an extra C star, in fact, C star cross C star kicking around here. If I let C star act on A star omega with weights 0, 1, minus 1, then this restricts to an action on mu inverse of 0. So there's an extra C star covariance later when we start introducing more geometry. So this is the 2D. And 3D, this function trace W is C star invariant. So W is up on the board over here. Yeah. So if I scale all of these guys up by 1 and all of these guys down by 1, then I don't scale W at all. And in particular, I don't scale trace W at all. It's invariant. OK, so yeah, that's enough notation and reminders. So before I move on to the real maths, are there any questions? No, I guess not. Okay, so as I said at the start, there will be essentially two treatments here that give rise to these new Yangians. And they both come from Hall algebras. So there's a 2D version, which runs as follows. I take, define H by Q to be the direct sum over dimension vectors of the G gamma equivariant Borel-Moore homology of mu gamma inverse 0 Q. And as I just said, there's an extra C star in the picture. And around this point, adding in that extra C star will correspond to a sort of quantum deformation of this guy. So at certain points, it will be worth putting it in. So here, I can let this extra C star act on this space and take the equivariant Borel-Moore homology of that instead. Maybe a slightly more highbrow way of writing down what this is it's the Borel-Moore homology of the stack of gamma dimensional representations of the pre-projective algebra, where I may be throwing in this optional extra C star and quotienting out this guy by C star. So this is the 2D version. If you're not super happy with Borel-Moore homology of stacks, then OK, take the bottom row of this equality. And if you're not super happy with equivariant Borel-Moore homology, it's dual to equivariant compactly supported cohomology. And hopefully, that's at least one of those ways of seeing this is to your taste. So then we can consider instead the 3D version, which is defined as follows. I take the direct sum over dimension vectors. So in both instances, what I'm getting up on the board is really just a graded vector space where the grading is given by dimension vector and also cohomological degree. I'll have to get onto what the algebra structure is later. So this is just now the cohomology of G gamma equivariant cohomology, where, again, I might like to throw in this extra C star of A, Q, tilde, gamma. So now this is a much nicer space than this one. This generally is a horrific singularity. This is just affine space. But the payoff is that instead of considering this sheaf, which is very easy to understand, we should consider the vanishing cycle sheaf, which is, on the face of it, harder to understand. And again, there's a sort of slightly more eyebrow way of thinking about what this guy is. It's the cohomology of the stack of representations of the Jacobi algebra with coefficients in this strange sheaf. So, where again, I might have to quotient by a copy of C star. This equality kind of makes sense in that points in here parameterize representations of the pre-projective algebra. So, I mean, you know, if you know what the top and the bottom are, it's kind of a tautology. This seems a bit harder to make sense of because points in here correspond to very special points in here, points where all of these extra relations are satisfied. So how can this possibly be true? Well, one of the first and unfortunately only things I'm going to tell you about this sheaf is that it's always supported on the critical locus of a trace W. This is a general fact. If I have some function on a smooth space and I take the vanishing cycles of the constant sheaf with respect to it, whatever I get is a perverse sheaf supported on the critical locus of that function, i.e., I believe it's on this board, i.e., representations of this Jacobi algebra.
Random question.
Yeah.
If this representation of this Jacobi algebra, the stack is supposed to be a non-commutative analog of a moduli stack of sheaves on a Calabi-Yau threefold, what is the analog of the ambient stack, the A, in the commutative?
The which A? A Q tilde.
A Q tilde gamma. Yeah.
Yeah. So. The sort of background or the direction into which I came into this subject is Donaldson-Thomas theory. In Donaldson-Thomas theory, what you use over and over again is you have this kind of heuristic idea, kind of that morally all of your moduli spaces are zero-dimensional, even though in general they're not. And so you should be able to count points. You should be able to do Donaldson-Thomas theory. The moral is, like I say, always or usually false. But the way the moral is realized is that, at least locally, you can realize whatever moduli space you're interested in as the critical locus of a function. And using this local description, you start cooking up counts. The ambient space is just some, you know, there is no God-given ambient space for your moduli space. You just have to cook one up. And in general, you can only do it locally, and in general, it's a mess. This is just such a choice of ambient space, which happens to be exceptionally nice and easy to work with. It has no real modular meaning in terms of representations of the Jacobi algebra, except as a nice home for that moduli stack. So, in particular, if I were to give this entire talk, but instead of starting with representations of a quiver, start with coherent sheaves on a curve, around about this point, I would have started talking about coherent sheaves on the total space of O plus K. That would be my the analog of this 3CY category. There just is no natural choice for what this AQ tilde would be. There, it's just not in such a lucky situation. Okay, so I never really want to say very much about this because it's hard to define it in a short period of time in such a way that it actually, you know, has any real meaning. So instead, let me explain, or let me just say, that these two are isomorphic. So this theorems that take me from constant sheaves or constant motives on two CY categories, like the category of representations of a pre-projective algebra, to vanishing cycle cohomology or virtual motives on a three CY category, like the category of representations of a Jacobi algebra, these all go under the name of dimensional reduction. And the theorem, it's not much of a theorem, but it took a while, is that the dimensional reduction isomorphism is an isomorphism of algebras. Okay, so I haven't defined either algebra structure, so this doesn't have a great deal of meaning yet. But what it does mean is that during this talk, I'm only going to bother defining the algebra structure down here. So I should put some names up. Here, the space with its algebra structure was introduced by Schiffman, Passereau, whereas this space for an arbitrary quiver with potential, not necessarily a quiver cooked up as a tripled quiver with its canonical potential, this algebra was originally introduced by Konsevich and Soloman. Okay, so I'm only going to give you the algebra structure down here. For time. Yeah, okay, so let me not say anything much more about the dimensional reduction isomorphism, except that it's a way to get from things like this, where the space is very nice, but the sheaf is grim, to things like this, where the sheaf is very nice, but this space is a horror show. So the way to think of this space, modulo G gamma, is as a very singular, very stacky Nakajima quiver variety, i.e. oftentimes it will contain as a dense open subset a Nakajima quiver variety modulo a trivial action of C star. So it's some sort of nasty, stacky, singular compactification of Nakajima quiver varieties, which is, however, somehow more natural. But the point being that the trade-off from top to bottom is bad sheaf, nice space, nice sheaf, bad space. Okay, so if we're willing to work one side of this trade-off, I only have to define one Hall algebra structure. And it goes as follows. I let rep gamma prime, gamma double prime, or gamma prime, gamma double prime are two dimension vectors with some gamma. This is the stack of short exact sequences of CQ tilde modules. 0 goes to rho prime, goes to rho double prime, goes to 0, where the dimension of this is gamma prime, dimension of the middle guy is gamma, dimension of the final guy is gamma double prime. Of course, the dimensions add up. I have a forgetful map down from here to rep gamma prime CQ tilde times rep gamma double prime CQ tilde, which just forgets the middle term or just remembers the inner, the outer terms. And likewise, I have a map down to here where the dimension vector is the dimension vector of the middle term. And everything here is C star equivariant. And well, the basic idea is the same as the basic idea in pretty much every Hall algebra construction. I want to take the vanishing cycle cohomology or the cohomology of, or hypercohomology of this sheaf down here, pull it back and push it forward. I'm going to give unusually large amounts of detail as to how that works so that I can generalize slightly. So let me label this space A, this space B, this map Q. Then what have I got? So QB maps to Q star QA. It's the normal junction map. I can apply the vanishing cycle functor to this map, and I get some map of sheaves, or complexes of sheaves, down here. And then I can take the hypercohomology of that map, and I get a map from the cohomology of from this guy, H, Q tilde, W, gamma prime, tensor, H, Q tilde, gamma double prime, to the cohomology of the guy upstairs. With coefficients in vanishing cycles. Okay, so this is what happens if I take hypercohomology, which is another way of saying take the derived push forward to a point. Okay, so yeah, let me leave that for now and give you a sort of lay of the land. So the kind of geography of the subject at this point is that the 2D version is, well, perhaps depending on your taste, is somehow more natural. More natural. I.e., more obviously related to Nakajima Kubo varieties, i.e., we are taking Borel Moore homology of things that look like partial compactifications of Nakajima Kubo varieties. No difficult sheaf, no vanishing cycles, and also, just in terms of mathematical history, this came first. Related to 1 and 3, this thing more obviously acts on the cohomology of Nakajima Kubo varieties, so it more obviously belongs in this talk, given section 0. Okay, so why study the 3D version? Well, it's how you prove everything. How you prove everything. Not in this case, but in related cases. For example, the case where there's a version of this where upstairs you have the Borel-Moore homology of the stack of representations of a fundamental group of a Riemann surface, and down here you have the same thing but for a Riemann surface across a circle. This dimensional reduction really is dimensional reduction in the sense of topological field theory. And so, well, you have a 3D version and a 2D version, you can understand the 3D version, you're always in better shape. Let me not say anything more along those lines in front of this audience, but rather give some concrete propaganda for backing up this claim. So let me just start rattling off theorems, I guess. Theorem. This guy is the Borel-Moore homology of a closed subspace of the representations of the doubled quiver. So I get for free a map from H pi Q into the Borel-Moore homology of all representations of C Q bar Q. Or rather, the direct sum over all dimension vectors of gamma dimensional representations of this guy. This is now smooth. It's a smooth stack. It's an affine space modulo some gauge group. So Borel-Moore homology becomes the same thing as cohomology. And this now is very well understood. This is a shuffle algebra. In every dimension vector gamma, I can tell you exactly what it looks like. It's some ring of commutative polynomial ring with generators determined by gamma. And the product that takes me between different dimension vectors is some shuffle product. Everything here is extremely explicit. And this is interesting if you actually ever want to multiply two elements in here together. It's not so easy geometrically to write down what happens under all these correspondences. But if you can work in here, you can just forget about the geometry and multiply elements in here, and it's easy. So what would be great is if this were an injection, if this were actually a subalgebra. And indeed, this turns out to be the case. So this was a conjecture of Schiffman and Vassarow from their work on the AGT conjectures. And now it's a theorem. So this enables you to multiply elements, which is a pretty high priority if you want to understand what an algebra is. Second theorem. So I've not said anything about mixed Hodge structures. But this guy carries a mixed Hodge structure by a work of Deligne, and the 3D version carries a mixed Hodge structure by a work of Saito. This isomorphism, this dimensional reduction isomorphism, is an isomorphism in the category of mixed Hodge structures. And the mixed Hodge structure on here is pure. And this is important because we can calculate the weight polynomial of this guy, but not very easily the Poincaré polynomial. But if it's pure, then the weight polynomial and the Poincaré polynomial are the same. So we get via a calculation of Moskovoy, we know exactly how big this is. Again, this is a fairly fundamental thing to try and work out about an algebra. How big is it? And it's isomorphic as a graded vector space, not as an algebra, to the symmetric algebra generated by a direct sum of the gammas. So again, this is some graded vector space graded by dimension vector. With an extra variable t. So this t, it doesn't change the dimension vector degree, but it has cohomological degree 2. So this has cohomological degree 2. So this algebra is isomorphic as a graded vector space to the symmetric algebra generated by some other graded vector space. And like I say, we know how big this is now because the characteristic polynomial of the gamma is given by A gamma Q, where this is the Katz polynomial. It's the number of absolutely indecomposable gamma dimensional Q reps over FQ. So this makes sense if Q is a prime power. But Katz proved that this function, which a priori is a function of prime powers, is actually a polynomial. So it makes sense for all Q. I should mention, I suppose, that Katz's second conjecture about these guys, which was proved by Hausel, Letelier, and Villegas, was that they have positive coefficients. Well, let's give us another proof of that. But more interesting for us it tells us exactly how big this algebra is. And it also is a hint, right? So what have I written here? That this graded algebra is isomorphic as a graded vector space to the symmetric algebra generated by something else, but not as an algebra. So where in our lives have we seen such a theorem? Well, every time we've seen a PBW theorem, you have exactly the same phenomenon. So this is a hint that this guy is perhaps the universal enveloping algebra of some Lie algebra, or perhaps we're in some slightly other situation, and it's a quantum group. And it turns out it's the former if I don't have the C star here, and it's the latter if I do have the C star here. So that is going to be, so my last of propaganda is that this H by Q is a universal enveloping algebra for some Lie algebra, Okay, so the PBW theorem then tells us how big that Lie algebra has to be. It has to be like this guy. So I'm going to carry on denoting it with the same letters. Let's see. Okay, and just in case I don't get there, what has this got to do with what I promised you at the beginning of the talk? Well, I've already told you about one of Katz's conjectures. Katz's other conjecture about these polynomials, which is a theorem of Tamash-Hausl, is that A gamma evaluated at 0, i.e. the constant term of this polynomial, is equal to dimension of GQ, the gammath weight space of the Katz-Moody Lie algebra associated to Q. So this is very strong evidence that I'm going to be able to do what I said I'd do. I provide you with some Lie algebra, which will just be this V gamma, not the T, such that its zeroth cohomology is the original Katz-Moody Lie algebra.
Can I ask you about the previous theorem? So in the proof of the theorem, this, when all this polynomial A gamma will appear in both these guys, I mean, what kind of definition of A gamma are you going to use to prove this theorem?
The size.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it's off the board now. Probably just left the board. Via dimensional reduction, I don't have to calculate vanishing cycle cohomology. I get to calculate Borel-Moore homology.
Yeah, then again, probably pass to fixed points, and then
passing to fixed points is, it's you can't do that because you've got to keep track of. Let's say I have an affine space, and I like C star act on it by dilation, and I count fixed points. I get one whatever, and it forgets what power of Q I should actually have in that. But what do I do? So there's a dimensional reduction of this story to representations of the pre-projective algebra. That's not the one you take. That one you get by letting C star act linearly on the omegas. If instead I let C star act linearly on the A stars, and zero on the others, I get a dimensional reduction to the stack of pairs of a representation of the quiver and an endomorphism of that representation. The relations I get impose exactly that. So now I just have to work out the Borel-Moore homology of that stack. That's still quite hard, but it's related via taking plethysmic log, dividing, and then taking plethysmic exp to the Borel-Moore homology of the stack of pairs of a representation of my quiver along with a nilpotent endomorphism. Now we're in business, because you can stratify that according to the Jordan normal form of my nilpotent endomorphism. And I get some big partition function. And this is exactly Huer's partition function for the plethysmic exponential of Katz polynomials.
Oh, so this is a good literal definition.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, in the end, it finally makes contact with combinatorics.
Yeah, because I have to. No, there was a combinatorial definition.
Right.
So this is just more or less explicit formal for Katz.
Yeah, Huer's results, or I guess it's Katz Huer's result, is that if I take the plethysmic exponential of the partition function, which has as coefficients the Katz polynomials, maybe times 1 over 1 minus q, then I get some other formal power series, which can be given explicitly in terms of combinatorics. I hope. Yes, OK, so. So like I say, this is some propaganda. And let me reiterate, none of these things can anyone prove without using the 3D version of this whole algebra. And so it seems like a powerful thing. Seems like it must introduce some new ideas that are particularly useful. And I'm going to give a sort of quick demonstration of an example of this, was first suggested to me by Kevin. And I think it really exemplifies, you know, the sort of the power of this this 3D extension. This argument, you'll see it has, it, you know, just disappears. It evaporates entirely if I look at the 2D koha. Okay, so a sample proof of one of these theorems, and it's the theorem, this one. So I went into a slightly unusually high degree of detail about how you push-pull vanishing cycle cohomology. And the point I was trying to make was to get homomorphisms in vanishing cycle cohomology, what I really start with is a homomorphism of sheaves here. And then I push it forward to a point, and I get a homomorphism in cohomology. But I don't have to push all the way forward to a point. So I can, let me introduce a map over here. Lambda going from representations of any dimension vector of CQ tilde to the configuration space of points on A1. And what this does is it takes me from rho to the generalized eigenvalues of all of these operators, these new loops, omega I in Q0, with multiplicity. So this is a graded stack, graded by the total dimension of my representation. This is a graded variety, graded by the number of points. And this is a graded map, because I've left in the multiplicity. That's my diagram. So if I take lambda Cartesian product with lambda, I get from here down to sim A1 times sim A1. And this space is a monoid. If I take two unions of unordered points in A1, I can take their union, and I get a new union of unordered points in A1. Let me call that map U for union. And it takes me to sim A1. And then I have my map down here, lambda. And the point is that this diagram commutes. If I have some flag of representations of CQ tilde, i.e. something which is written in block upper diagonal form, then the generalized eigenvalues of the blocks are the same as the generalized eigenvalues of the whole thing. So nothing too mysterious going on there. Right, but now instead of taking these correspondences given by maps of sheaves here and then later here and pushing them forward to a point, I can push them forward to just here. And so it's really, given the commutativity of this diagram, it's formal that I need to introduce one bit of terminology. So if I take perverse sheaves, or the unbounded derived category of perverse sheaves, on this configuration space, this has a monoidal product, or a sort of convolution product, where F tensor G is defined to be the external product of f and g, which will now live here, and then I push it forward along this map. It won't come up, but this really comes from an honest monoidal product on perverse sheaves because this map is finite. So what's the formal thing? It's that this derived push forward of the vanishing cycles, i.e. this thing that when I take the total hypercohomology of, I get the underlying graded mixed Hodge structure of the koha. This is an algebra object in this category, in D per sin A1. And you should think of this as being like a sort of a stopping point, right? I mean, in the end, I want to take the derived push forward all the way from here to a point. And I can do that by taking the derived push forward to here, trying to understand very well what's happened here, and then take that understanding, take its derived push forward to a point, and hope to get some further understanding of the guy that I wanted to study all along, the Hall algebra. That's basically exactly what happens here. So I meant to be proving theorem star. And the way to do that, the strategy for doing that, is to show that this Hall algebra has a coproduct, making it into a bialgebra, and therefore, because it's connected, sort of automatically a Hopf algebra, but furthermore, a co-commutative coproduct. Then it will follow formally that it has to be the universal enveloping algebra of its primitive elements under that coproduct. So where does this coproduct come from? And I believe this is really where you see the joy of the 3D version. So let U, to start with, containing the origin in A1, be an open ball. Then I claim that the restriction map from the stack of representations of CQ tilde with its funny sheaf to the cohomology of the same stack, but where I insist that the generalized eigenvalues of the omegas are in U. This is an isomorphism. And this is because, well, one way to argue for this is using this C star action that's started to take a back seat actually in this talk. So you can show this using the C star action, which contracts the eigenvalues. Okay, so that's the first observation. And the second observation is that there's a kind of A1 action here. There's a translation action here, which is going to mean that I don't actually have to insist that 0 is in here. So say instead that U prime is a disjoint open ball. Disjoint from U. So in particular, 0 is not going to be in U prime anymore. But there will be some number alpha in here. Just pick one. So how do I back up this observation? It's as follows. If I change a given representation by leaving row A alone, leaving rho A star alone. And taking all of my rho I's and adding a scalar, rho omega I plus alpha times the identity. This transformation doesn't change W. So W probably left the board some time ago. Let me remind you what it is. W equals the sum over the arrows of the commutator of A with A star times the sum over the vertices of omega I. So I misspoke when I said that it doesn't change W, but it doesn't change trace of W. So what this transformation does is it takes my old trace W, and then it adds a bunch of traces of commutators. And the trace of any commutator is zero. So this leaves my function trace W invariant. And in particular, it takes me from this ball to this ball, because it shifts all of the generalized eigenvalues by the generalized eigenvalues of these omega I's by alpha. So the upshot is that in this observation, I could have included the prime here, and the same statement would be true. So then the result is the following, that if I take the cohomology of the stack of representations of the tripled quiver, which after all is my coha, and I take the restriction map to the locus where all of the generalized eigenvalues are either in U or U prime, I get some map. And now this cohomology is isomorphic to the cohomology of the substack where I insist that all of the generalized eigenvalues are in U, tensor the cohomology of the substack where I insist all of the generalized eigenvalues are in U prime. And this, the argument for this, I don't know, I'm in two minds about whether to give it. It's kind of, so one way you could try and show this would be to argue that this stack is isomorphic to the Cartesian product of this stack with this stack. This, in fact, is not true. But remember, the support of this is given by representations of the Jacobi algebra, so a substack of here. And we do have that rep U commutator U prime of the Jacobi algebra is naturally isomorphic to the Cartesian product, where I insist that all of the generalized eigenvalues of the omegas are in U cross same guy, but for U prime. And that's because of a proposition that probably everyone has already forgotten, because it was right at the beginning, that the Jacobi algebra for Q tilde W is isomorphic to the pre-projective algebra adjoined this omega. And under this translation, remember, omega is the sum of all of the omega i's. What we're looking at is the generalized eigenvalues of this operation omega. And if I have a representation of this guy, the generalized eigenvalues of omega all being in U or U prime, it splits canonically as a direct sum of a representation where all of the generalized eigenvalues are in U and a other sum and where they're all in U prime. And it's precisely because this is central. Otherwise, this argument fails completely. Okay, and then using this observation with and without the prime added to the U, we get that this is isomorphic to H I Q tensor H by Q. So composing all of these maps, we get the coproduct. As various experts in the subject have pointed out to me while I've given this talk a couple of times, this construction is, there's not much to it, and it's what anyone would do confronted with this situation if they had enough expertise. As long as they can see the thing as a factorization sheet, I mean, that's what it really is, over the configuration space of points in A1. But you only get to see any of that structure when you pass to the 3D model of this koha. The extra eigenvalues of the omegas are precisely what you lose when you work with the true 2D koha. Okay.
Is there any kind of understanding about what kind of sheaves you get on the symmetric powers of A1 generically? I presume they have the local systems, so do you know anything about that? And first of all, where the singularities will be and what do you know about the model?
In terms of the category of, so the symmetric monoidal category of constructible sheaves on the symmetric, on the configuration space of points on A1, I can tell you the following. And this again is formal to people who know the subject.
And there's a color of configurations, right? There's a color of configurations. Or because you have.
I suppose, yeah. But I'm not using that.
Awesome, by Gauss.
Right. That's true. I've not thought much about that structure, but I mean the sheaves are really controlled by vector spaces in the following sense. This derived push forward is isomorphic to sim of something, so sim direct sum over n greater than 0 of some sheaf or some complex of sheaves. F n, where F n is a bounded complex of perverse sheaves on sim n a 1, and each F n is again this. Follows really from the general theory. This is supported on the small diagonal. And is also, so A1 acts on the small diagonal transitively and freely. It's also A1 invariant. So let me just write. Yeah. So. You have, really, each of these sheaves is controlled by a vector space. I have an infinite ascending union of complexes of vector spaces, and out of that, I construct this sheaf. So you can get some monodromy out of that, but there's no more interesting monodromy in the picture. Yeah, so what's on the board starts to break a little bit if I add in the extra C star, right? I mean, for my ball U, I'm in pretty good shape for leaving C star in, but for U prime, not so much, because it doesn't contain the origin. Okay, so what is the corollary? The observation is that this coproduct is clearly co-commutative, i.e. I can swap the role of U and U prime without really changing anything, because I can sort of rotate them into each other. It follows from, I think I'm meant to call this Cartier's theorem, but I might be getting the history of the subject wrong. Cartier's theorem, or just, I don't know, an exercise. This algebra is isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of the primitives for this coproduct, where primitive things are those A such that coproduct applied to them goes to A tends to 1 plus 1 tends to A. And since we know the size of this algebra, we know from the PPW theorem how big this Lie algebra is. So it's direct sum over gamma V gamma. I join this T, this element of cohomological degree 2 that doesn't change the dimension vector. And V gamma, or the direct sum over all dimension vectors, this is going to be G tilde Q, or at least the positive piece. So there's a way of doubling this, but I never somehow find the time during my talks to get on to the second half. Let me just wrap up with some kind of assurance that this Lie algebra that I've somehow cooked up out of this construction, which I hope I've convinced you is reasonably natural and comes out of general moves in the subject, that this isn't, I don't know, something stupid like some enormous vector space with the zero Lie bracket. Let me revert to 3D. This acts on dimensionally unreduced Nakajima quivert varieties, i.e. spaces with vanishing cycle complexes on them, such that if I hit them with the dimensional reduction theorem, I get to the cohomology of Nakajima quivert varieties. And H, Q, tilde W, and in particular,
these spaces, are they going to be wild modules for the algebra?
These spaces.
Yes. If you sort of double this Lie algebra, suppose you define it type quiver, then.
These spaces, I mean, they're.
I mean, using the Cajun quiver, I just give exactly wild modules.
Ah. Well, the middle, right? The middle.
The file module for the current algebra.
Ah.
Full
I don't know. I don't know, but I suspect so, but I haven't checked. So this, but more particularly this, where EI is the ith basis dimension vector, these contain Nakajima's raising operators. So in particular, and this is in cohomological degree zero. So in particular, the cohomological degree zero piece of this new algebra contains the usual Katz-Moody Lie algebra via Nakajima's theorem. But then by Hausl's theorem, they have the same size. They have the same size, so they're the same. This is without loops. With loops, there's an extension of this theorem. And then finally, this is a good place to end. I hope I've convinced you that not only is the Lie bracket not trivial, but this isn't, you know, some wild algebra that's just far too large to be a reasonable thing to study. A final piece of propaganda is the following, that this GQ tilde, this is the isomorphic to the Maulicker-Kunkov Lie algebra. So this is actually a slightly subtle thing to even state. This Lie algebra is defined over some larger coefficient ring, and then it's conjectural that it can be defined over Q. This is explicitly defined over Q, so Just writing this down involves giving an affirmative answer to a conjecture in their paper. But it also implies a positive answer to another question, which is Okunkov's conjecture. So he conjectured not only that one can write this down over Q, but that once you do this and you retain the cohomological grading, you get the following, that the characteristic function of the Lie algebra is equal to, for the gammath piece, is equal to the Katz polynomial for gamma. Okay, so I hope that's enough propaganda and enough convincing, and thank you for your patience.
So one of the pieces of propaganda was that somehow this, you know, using this 3D point of view allows you to compute the character of, basically the character of the cohomology that's about,
yeah.
You can define without going to 3D, but somehow you can only get the sense of going to 3D. So can you do the same if you just work with the Kojima Kuo writers and ask about computing character? Knowledge of
Kojima Kuo writers. Yeah, so.
I only know in finite types, and the answer is that somehow, I mean, they actually give you really this one modules over, say, the current algebra, and then if you can see the degraded characters, they give you some kind of Q particular functions, and so on. Well, they can correct it by satisfying some system of difference equations.
Yeah.
You only can provide a description. And also, the question is, do you get any new information about those?
I think probably not. So the way that this goes is that first one works out what is the weight polynomial. And you can do that however you like. And then you prove purity, which tells you that the weight polynomial is the Poincaré polynomial. For Nakajima quiver varieties, the weight polynomials, I think, are known due to work of Hausl again what's it called? Non-abelian Fourier analysis. Harmonic analysis. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, some combinatorial form, but something a computer can do. And then to go from that expression to knowing the what?
This Hausl formula is somehow kind of messy.
Yeah, that's why I said a computer should take over. Yeah. And to go from that to knowing what the cohomology is, you again need purity, but for Nakajima quiver varieties, purity is some standard argument because they're smooth and they contract to something. Yeah.
Is there anything new you can learn about Nakajima quiver varieties?
Well, I mean, in the fullness of time, one could try to learn or discover a positive answer to Sasha's question about what kind of modules these are.
There wasn't a qualm. I mean, the question was very vague. I mean, basically, okay, let's believe that we can double your Lie algebra, first of all.
Yeah.
Right? Because, and then you get some modules of this Lie algebra, which you can write. Can you say what these modules are? So we find that case somehow there are wild modules, which are just universal highest weight modules of the current algebra.
Mm.
That's the question. Use a covariant cohomology then. Sort of global wild modules, local wild modules. Global wild modules will exactly be the equivariant cohomology, non-covariant, the local ones. Right? It's the non-covariant cohomology, but you can also characterize it by some slightly different commercial property. So the question is, if we believe that it can double your Lie algebra and that it will have a cohomology of the Kojima Kuo varieties, can you, in principle, characterize by similar?
Well, okay, let's say, you know, I'm not going to try and do this right here and now, but let's say in some finite period of time I could convince you that I can not only double the thing, but that it's a Borchardt's Lie algebra. Let's say, you know, let's just all jump on board and say we believe that. Then now we have formulas for what the, you know, the highest weight modules of such things look like and such like. I mean, there are now character formulas for specific modules over current algebras for those guys.
The question is, Basil, do you expect that these things will be characterized by, can the cohomology of the Kojima Kuo variety will have an actionless algebra, And the resulting module will be characterized by some kind of universal property. It's a highest weight module. Universal highest weight module.
I think history suggests that that would be true, but I'm not going to stand here and claim that I have proved anything like that.
Weston, you might expect that these should see the bi-algebra structure by doing something like your co-product argument, but you're looking at what you get by rotating the two disks around each other.
Right.
So is that something you can compute like our...
You mean like getting the R matrix by actually understanding, you know, what is the discrepancy of the co-product if I let the thing?
Yeah, you should get like a, I mean, this formal arguments will tell you.
Right.
By algebra.
That is current research. Yeah, I mean, of course, that's a very good question, but again, I don't know the answer right now. Yeah. But.
A naive question. You lift a mixed hot structure over a point to a factorizing sheaf over A1.
Yeah.
Like, how general do you expect some lift like this to exist?
In total generality. So this monoid sim of A1 is itself, you're throwing away a lot of information. There's a monoid that lives above it, which is the monoid made a brief appearance at the start of the talk, the coarse moduli space of semi-simple representations that remembers much more. And this whole story exists at that level, i.e., the derived push forward down to that monoid is sim of something, and that something is worth studying is true at that level for general quivers with potential, not necessarily tripled quivers with their canonical potential. Yeah. I don't just expect that. That's a theorem.
I was just going to say, I feel like there wasn't anything really said about Yangians. Just checking.
Well, you know, the point of the talk is, what do I want to say?
Is it true that you just have to turn on this historic covariance and that will be the Yang?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean.
By definition, so does it.
Is there some way to C-star deform this co-product argument or to try and get the Yang's co-product?
This is Kevin's. Yes, I mean this construction of the co-product, I've tried to convince you during this talk, is pretty easy and natural and nice. There's a much more general construction of a co-product for quivers with potential, which is simple to state but hard to carry out. And it's that you take your usual correspondence diagram and you try to read it in reverse. And it turns out you can do that very generally, but at a certain cost, which is that one of those maps just doesn't want you to do this. And in order to come up with any kind of reasonable definition, you end up having to localize the target with respect to an Euler class. That is, you have a co-product that doesn't go from H to H tensor H. It goes from H to H tensor H localized with respect to some Euler class. And that Euler class is going to end up having bundled into it your H bar if you switch on the H bar and try and read the correspondence diagram in reverse. But there's no extra formal difficulty in doing that. It's just that the answer is a little bit messy, but it's kind of meant to be messy, right? I mean, when you switch on the extra H bar.
The sort of promotion from 2D to 3D you can do for any symplectic quotient, right? Not just quivers. Even infinite dimensional symplectic quotients like the vanity-finds each molar space.
Mm-hmm.
I assume these kind of operations that you do using the extraterrestrial structure are probably similar to the ones that have to do with the important singular support in the landlands.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I never get to talk about the double. But there are a couple of... Yeah, what do I want to say here? Yeah, so one way to realize the double is in the Kohn-Seybert-Soderman picture, it's not just representations of a quiver that carries a cohomological Hall algebra structure, it's the any Serre substack of that. So any stack that's such that any short exact sequence of elements in your category, if the outer two are in it, the inner one is in it. So one way to get the double is you restrict to representations where the underlying representation of the doubled quiver is zero. Oh, sorry, nilpotent. And taking that cohar and taking its associated Lie algebra, you get the other half. So if you do this entire talk back from scratch, but instead of starting with quivers, you start with curves, and you end up at some point talking about Higgs moduli spaces, that other half ends up being precisely the pre-image of or the set theoretic pre-image of zero under the Hitchin map. So yes, I would expect that to play a role, but especially in the formation of lower ring operators. What do you mean, not the same? Yeah. They're not the same, but they have to be isomorphic, right? If they're going to be a form of Borchardt's algebra. There's a Chevet involution between them, which is hard to write down. Yeah.
Not like a Fourier transform or something?
So, how much do you know about the McGertie-Nevins compactification of Nakajima quiver varieties? Oh, whatever. It's a tricky one. Another way of saying what is the Chevalier involution is it should be a pairing on every G gamma, but also the G gamma cohomological degree I paired with G gamma cohomological degree I. And how do you get such a pairing out of geometry, out of geometric representation theory? Well, that's a Hodge pairing. How do you get that pairing? It's by you have to have I don't know how much sense this is making. You have to have some sort of Lefschetz operator in the picture, and yeah, it's complicated. Okay.
Any other questions, or should we...